report to transporter room 3.
O'Brien here.
I need you in transporter room 3.
This is the captain. Meet me in transporter room 3.
Join us in transporter room 3.
Captain, we're headed for transporter room 3.
This is your favorite transporter room, isn't it?
You're listening to Transporter Room 3 with your hosts Phil Perello and Scott Galora.
Energize.
Welcome to another episode of Transporter Room 3. Mr. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Phil. I'm riding on high on the episode 5 of Picard with the return of a certain someone. Spoilers, I guess we should say. I feel like it's a spoiler. Spoilers. What do you think?
If you haven't watched it yet, don't listen to this. Watch it at least twice, then come back and listen to us at least 3 times. Ro is back.
Ro Laren is back. Wow.
We have been sitting on this, Scott, since before Christmas of 2022.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm so glad that it did not leak.
I can't believe it didn't leak, actually. Same. I'm surprised that they managed to keep it quiet. I keep calling her Ensign Ro, but she's now Commander. She's Commander Ro now, right?
Right.
Michelle Forbes is back. And I mean, you know, we obviously this season is, well, I mean, I guess we should just say off the bat, we're pretty much diving right in, right? No news to talk about, really.
Nope. Going right for it, baby.
Okay. Yeah. So the episode 5 of Picard. Obviously this show is this season is finally embracing the next generation of it all. So there's been a little bit of a question there, right? About like, oh, will we get like a Chief O'Brien cameo? Is Tasha Yar somehow going to get referenced? You know, I think Denise Crosby had hinted
that she might be. Bearded engineer from season 1.
The who?
The bearded engineer, the portly fellow from season 1.
right. And each of the engineers from season 1.
any of them, yes, any of them.
Yeah. So, you know, the fact that they managed to bring Ro back, I feel like that she was actually maybe one I didn't expect, because it seemed as though they kind of finished her. They'd used her less and less as Next Generation went on, and they kind of finished her storyline in a way, right? She left Starfleet and everything last time we saw her, and in Preemptive Strike, I think it was in season 7.
Right.
So I was like, wow, I was surprised. Did you know before you saw the episode or had you heard?
Okay. None idea. All I was told was get ready for 305. You know, I hope you like 305. It's going to be good.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And when it happened, I became the Leo pointing at the TV meme. I gasped. I had to pause it. My wife was like, what are you doing? Shut up. Just shut up. It's Ensign Ro. I'm like, sequel to Preemptive Strike, which is one of my favorite episodes. I think it's the best thing Patrick Stewart's directed.
Oh, I forgot he directed that.
So did he when I talked to him about it for Picard season 1.
I get the feeling that Patrick Stewart has always had an affection for the Ro character, though. I'm not surprised to hear that he directed that. You know, I wonder if her coming back had anything to do with him, if he recommended it or if he was pushing for it or anything like that.
From what I was told by a person who works in publicity at Paramount, he wasn't really pushing for that as far as this person knew, but they knew that it was hard to get Michelle Forbes to come back.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Because she knows how important this character is. She didn't realize until, you know, after the show, after she had moved on from Trek in the interim years. Again, this is what I was told. And she was, you know, very protective of the character and how and was very mindful of how important she was to young women.
Okay.
Throughout the years. And there was some reluctance, a cautionary reluctance, you know, a deserved right. caution about reapproaching the role, especially with the fate of Roe.
Yeah, because it's one episode where they sort of tie her story up. She seems to be definitively dead, I think, by the end of the story, right? Like,
yeah, and it's Star Trek. She could have survived. They could have beamed her out last minute or something, you know?
but I feel like we'll see, but I feel like for the context of this season at least, she's probably gone.
Yeah, and what an earned sacrifice. What an emotional sacrifice. That I think that scene with her and Picard in the holodeck and in the briefing room, and when she hands him the earring, I choked up. I cried when she gave him the earring, and I had to pause the episode and check myself. Like, is something wrong? Like, why am I choking up? Like,
what do you mean? Like check your blood pressure and like.
No, just like I could not believe Star Trek was making me do that chin quiver, ugly cry face thing. You know, like I could not believe that it was affecting me this way.
Well, that's, you know, this is why we have done this podcast for 11 years, right?
So. it's a pretty good form of therapy, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I hear you for sure. Well, so I just have to say also, she doesn't seem to have aged since she played Admiral Kane on Battlestar Galactica. And that was like...
she's gone back in time a few years.
Yeah, that's got to be 15 years ago, at least, I think.
At least, yeah.
Right? So good for Michelle Forbes. But I thought it was interesting the way they brought her back and they fully acknowledged the, you know, somewhat convoluted backstory in terms of how she left. Because the show could have said, you know what, this is from an episode that happened, you know, in 1994 or whatever. We don't need to touch on all that stuff. Let's just bring her back. But, you know, Metallus and his people, they were like, no, we're going to dive into it. We're going to address it, you know, so it makes sense within the context of everything. And I appreciated that. Because when she first shows up in the episode, I was a little bit like, oh, like, she's not supposed to be in Starfleet anymore. Like I always kind of thought that maybe she had been killed off because we know the McKee had been like wiped out basically. And so when they took the time to actually address all that stuff and kind of explain it, I was like, yeah, this is like, it might be exposition or plot synopsis to some, but I think in the history of the character and in the world building of Star Trek, it's important that they acknowledge that stuff because it adds a texture to things that is, I think it's something that was missing from seasons one and two of Picard, where they didn't explain how we got from point A to point B over the years. Like, remember, I'm sorry to dominate this chat right now, but like, remember in season one of Picard with the freaking Borg cube that was like a museum now or something. I don't remember what they called it. The artifact or something.
Yeah.
They never explained what the situation was really, how it got there, what the deal was, what it was just like, this is the situation now. And, you know, we're just rolling with it. The same thing with Hugh, right? Hugh the Borg, Del Arco's character, right? Like, he was there. He wasn't a Borg anymore. He had been de-Borged. They never went into it. They never explained it. And so there's like a cognitive gap between where we last saw these things and these characters and where they were now. It almost felt like Picard as a show was sniffing its nose a bit at continuity and at Star Trek of old. Whereas here, because we know Terry Metalis, the showrunner, is a super fan, like us, like, he's like, no, like, we have to, I mean, he hasn't said this to me. I'm assuming though that he's like, no, we of course have to explain why she's not with the McKee and how she's back in Starfleet again, you know? And I think it makes for a stronger stronger version of Star Trek Picard by doing that stuff.
I agree.
That's the end of the episode. We're done.
And I was also I was embarrassed watching it the first time because I just bought that she's back, and I appreciated the episode explaining you were the Maquis, you betrayed us, and why would they let you back in? I was like, oh yeah, that is a wrinkle. How are they going to address that? Right. When they did, it makes sense. At the same time, I'm also going, Starfleet, you tried once already with this woman. And she right. let you. Why would you right. bank on her again? At the same time, you know who Ro is. She's very good at what she did. Whatever she did, it would be valuable to the Federation, you know?
Yeah.
So I was on board with it, especially with her line reading when she said she goes in arduous rehabilitation that Starfleet put her through. It's like, oh shit. Like that.
Yep.
You see what that is by her reaction, and that is exceptional acting. Shows you the story in your head without you ever seeing it. And I really appreciated that voice. And the
totally. And you know, the other thing is,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was just going to say Starfleet, the bleeding hearts of Starfleet, they're never going to give up on someone, right? They're always going to give them that second or third chance. So I bought it that she came in, but you were going to say, her and Patrick Stewart. I think it's some of the Patrick Stewart is like, you know, I think because he's so old, I don't find him to be super strong in the show anymore as a performer, but I think that the stuff he does with Michelle Forbes in this episode is some of the best stuff he's done this season as Picard. It's some really, really great back and forth between those two.
Yeah, exceptional acting. Yeah, for sure. Like there's been showier, more engaging, no pun intended, performances from everyone around him this season. Yeah. The exception of episode 2 and this one, and his big scene in 3 with Gates McFadden in the sick bay.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's
true. All of that scene, that briefing room scene, the fucking vitriol that he has, cause she broke his heart. Very honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It was like, it was a Fredo Michael Corleone.
Yeah, great analogies. Wow, great comparison.
Right, that's awesome. And but with a somewhat happier ending, but he didn't have to kill her, you know. So,
and it works so good. Like, I know I say this every week, pretty much, but it's a testament to the co-writers, Christopher Derrick and Cindy Appel. I'm mispronouncing your last name, I think, and I apologize for that. It's a testament to them and working with Terry and the whole team to compress almost 30 years of storytelling, nearly 30 years of what if into an hour of television. And all of it is earned. All of the questions to what if they were to get back together? What if they were to meet after that noble betrayal occurred? How would they behave?
Right.
Where would their relationship go, if anywhere? And it goes from, we are at odds. I suspect you are a traitor again. I suspect you are not even Bajoran anymore. To, you are one of the more human people I know.
Yeah.
You are one of the noblest I know. You broke my heart, but you put it back together again by sacrificing yours. That's a beautiful, that's a beautiful hour of television.
But it's harsh when implies that she's even betrayed the Bajoran faith, right?
At
one point, but she's not wearing the earring anymore.
Right. It's
like those are hard, harsh words coming from Picard, you know?
And he's needling her. He's hurt and he's lashing out.
Yeah. Yeah. It also speaks to, I'm sorry if there's any sound disturbances here. My cat is rubbing against my microphone. So
that's not a euphemism. I hope
that's not a euphemism. It's a little bit of headcanon, but I kind of feel like this Picard, he acts in a way that the older, the Picard of yesteryear The Picard of yesteryear would be more guarded, right? And this one is more, he's more willing to open up in that way and even in that sort of cruel way because he's hurt. But I think it works, right? Because it's like, it all goes back to the last time we saw Picard in All Good Things, the series finale, when he says, sits down to play cards and he says, I should have done this a long time ago, where he's finally opening himself up in a way that Picard had always avoided doing up until that point. So, right. So this just feels like a natural progression that now, especially now in his older years, where especially this season, which is dealing so much with legacy in, you know, between Jack and Sidney LaForge and right. You know, Thaddeus's, you know, Riker's deceased son, Thaddeus, you know, and even we'll see what happens with the Brent Spiner character, but you can be, that's always the legacy thing going on with the, you know, the Soon family and Data and everything. It just, you know, in a lot of ways, Ro was sort of a daughter to him. So it just makes sense that they would bring her back and that there would be this pretty emotional component to their interactions.
Right.
But Phil, can we get a little nerdy for a second here and talk about some design elements I picked up on in this episode?
Yeah, I've been waiting for you to ask that question. Go for it.
Okay. So the uniform that Ro wears, at first I was like, wait, is it like when Shatner wore the green tunic where the insignia was kind of hanging down on his belt? It was like her pips are positioned in a different place on the uniform. Did you notice that?
I think
it's a version. I think Geordi maybe wears that uniform in the images we've seen of him also, or a version of that uniform. It's just like, it's a variation on the Starfleet uniform, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Right. I think it's because she's in security intelligence or Starfleet intelligence.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. So maybe like, but she's in a different branch. Okay. But
yeah, Geordi's the museum. You know,
right? Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, and then what about Riker's had this on the whole season, I think, but is he wearing a version of a captain's jacket? Do you think?
Oh,
like,
man,
almost like the Picard. You know, the Picard sees Darmok jacket that you own.
That's right.
Think
I do.
What that is?
I still have to get it hemmed. Well, I got to rewatch the episode and find out. I'm onto something.
Yeah, but he's wearing something different from everyone else. And like Captain Shaw is a captain, but he's wearing the regular Starfleet uniform that everyone wears usually.
Right.
But Riker has on a thing that you can kind of zip down in the front. And I'm just wondering if it's the captain's jacket, but like he wears it zipped up, whereas Picard always had it open so you could see that like purple shirt that he wore under it.
Right. The gray blue thing.
Yeah.
Scott, I will give you a
dollar
tweet at Terry and ask him this.
Should I do it right now?
Do it. Do it right now, live on the air.
Okay, I'm going to do it. We'll see if we get a response.
Okay.
While I do that, do you want to talk about the Intrepid? I think it's the Intrepid that Ro shows up on, right?
Yeah. I like the design of that ship. I like how it arrives and it's very foreboding. And I also that it's being taken over by changelings. That was a cool wrinkle. And that explains the subterfuge or the seeming subterfuge that Ro is operating from. And I love that tension. I love that every episode up to this point and for the rest of the season, when characters come into a scene, the new characters are introduced, or they bring with them conflict instantly. There's a friction, there's some sparkage, there's some drama behind them. It's constantly fueling the tension. I can't recall Star Trek doing that before at this level, maybe with the exception of Six. Like every scene is just driven by a tension and conflict. New characters have a history. They have a beef. There's some friction there. There's a cloud hanging over them. And how the show addresses that is just really well done. It's not easy to do.
Yeah. Like, how desperate is Ro when you think about it, when she start, when you realize what she's actually confronting and how, like she says, there's been, I don't remember how many, she names a bunch of ships, but she says a bunch of ships have also been under similar circumstances, like presumably some kind of changeling infiltration, I think. And you know, the fact that she doesn't even trust the captain on the Intrepid, like mm-hmm. I mean, she's in a pretty dicey situation, and as we very see, like she doesn't make it out either. So in terms of so I just texted Terry. We'll see if he was. I just slacked. I just tweeted at Terry.
I love to be a nerd in that.
I mean, he is the kind of showrunner who, of course, knows the answer to that question. Whether it's right or wrong, he knows what we're talking about, right? Like he, of course, knows the Darmok jacket. Not to get all up on Terry's butt this episode. I feel like we're really cheerleading him, but like he's the opposite of the people who were running Picard in season one, who didn't really know or care about that stuff. I think. But how about the design? Did you notice the design of the Intrepid, the ship itself? Like, it's a pretty cool looking ship too.
It is a very cool looking ship, but you can see that at play in like the Nick Meyer era of Trek, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I love the angular neo new, you know, the old and the new coming together like that. I love that, because that's what my Star Trek would look like. It would look like the ones that's cool. Grew up on, you know?
It's cool. It is. Should we talk a little bit about Worf and Raffi while we're at it?
They
meet up with Kirk. Kirk Acevedo. Is that how you say his name? The guy from, he's been in a ton of stuff.
He's in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. He's in 12 Monkeys. Acevedo?
Yeah, I can't remember I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he plays a Vulcan. He's really good.
Time Lord. never seen that, which is a cool touch.
They do some interesting stuff on that planet. Because with the Ferengi from a couple of weeks ago, Sneer or whatever his name was, who Worf cut his head off. Sneed.
Yeah.
He's a Ferengi, but the design is a little different than what we're used to. And there's a little bit of flavor to him that we're kind of, he's more devious than the usual Ferengi we would get on like Deep Space Nine, for example. Not really comedic. And then here, this Vulcan too, he's not a typical Vulcan, right? He was whatever his like rough upbringing he had on this planet, I guess. He winds up being a crime lord with a scar across his face, but he still talks like a Vulcan in a lot of ways, you know?
That's what's cool about the character. Or one of the things that's cool about the character is it's like, what if someone with all that logic applied it to crime?
Right. Yeah,
and you never really saw a Vulcan behave that way. We've never seen a Vulcan criminal.
It's cool.
What does the Vulcan equivalent of Kingpin look like?
Right. Or
on the field, you know?
Yeah. I also like, so they he makes them fight, he makes Raffi and Worf fight to the death.
Cool.
Or as Worf calls her, Rafaela Musker or whatever, right? He has to say her full name. But like, it's got a little bit of an original series flavor to it as well. The way they make you think Worf's dead, where of course you know he's not really dead, but like they sell it that he's dead. But then of course actually he's okay, he's back and he's fine, you know. Right. So they have a little bit of humor there as well with him bleeding and, you know, like let's cut to the interrogation. So it's fun.
Right.
You know, and then there's
go ahead.
No, I was going to change the topic.
I was just going to say, I like the two of them doing the boots on the ground, sleuthing, investigating. And they're essentially, you know, the B plot in the halfway point of Trek 6, trying to find, you know, the two pairs of gravity boots, you know, that's what they're doing. And
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. We keep cutting each other off in our nerdy enthusiasm. Finish your thought.
I appreciated how so much of Trek 6 subtextually and structurally is in this season, from 7 finding the bucket hidden behind a light fixture. You know, it gave me, you know, Scotty finding the boots or the uniforms behind the rattling vent, the rattling air vent.
Yeah.
Clock building to something.
Yep.
From
right.
Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the equivalent to Kittimer. It's just good TV. I anything that harkens back to 6.
Oh yeah. It's also like it's pretty economical, the season so far. They only have 10 episodes and they're cramming a lot in. And so the idea that it turns out that Ro, just as Worf was Raffi's handler, Ro is Worf's handler.
Right.
You know, of course it makes perfect sense, but I didn't see it coming. You know, it's just like, oh, of course, now it's all ties together, right? So, and by the end of it, we finally have Worf, Riker, and Picard all face to face again for the first time since Star Trek Nemesis, in terms of what we've seen, I guess, right? And that was a cool moment as well, where they connect to Worf through the earring, and they're all surprised to see each other, like, oh, Mr. Worf, you know, just a cool moment.
It's a very cool moment. We're on the road to bringing them all together.
Yeah, yeah. What the hell is going on with Jack Crusher? Which, you know, obviously we don't want to talk about spoilers past this episode, but like, he seems to be in a bad way. Is he a changeling? What are we getting here? What's going on here? I guess you can't talk about it, but you know.
I can't talk about it. I'm not allowed. I was allowed to talk about it, I wouldn't, because two things. Yeah. One, I want everyone to experience it the way I did. Two, it's going to break my heart twice to have this show end on me a second time. I don't want any of this to end. I want to spend more time with this season. I'm going to rewatch it like I did 2, 3, 4, and 6 as a kid.
You know, we may yet see these Next Generation characters again. I have trouble believing. I would just say, you've seen the whole season. I've only seen through 6. So I've seen next week's episode, but like, great. I really don't know where the Jack storyline is going. And I'm very intrigued by it.
It's really cool. At least in my experience with the show, I got no idea. You know, I'm like, where the fuck are they going? Sorry. Where the F are they going with this? Wrong with Jack?
Do we not say fuck on the podcast?
There's a lot of there's a lot more prudes out there on the Twitter, given the choice an 80-year-old real actor made for his fictional character he's been playing for years.
That's right. There was that blowback, wasn't there? So stupid.
I understand that he said a word that we are not used to hearing on this very PG-13 franchise. At the same time, if the actor thought it felt emotionally honest for his character of 4 decades to say and behave in that moment of vulnerability, either accept it.
I think he has said it, and I think he said it in season 1 or season 2, if I remember correctly.
Accept it, because complaining about it online ain't going to change it. It's written in streaming ink.
How about when the Ro crashes into the nacelle and the way the ship is the ship is dipping for a while, like it's it's like the temporarily lost control, and then it starts to rise again. It's such a cool effect.
Star Trek 3 Bird of Prey hit with the torpedo vibes.
Right. Yeah.
And then
definitely.
It rears itself back up. I saw someone tweet with a GIF of it, and I think they're very accurate. first time I've ever seen a starship actually look pissed, actually look angry.
It does.
And that's
it's true.
What's scary for me is like, when I'm watching this going, okay, the changelings are more dangerous this time than they were the first time. And they were very dangerous. And the changelings, by the way, are doing all of this shit without the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is awesome. I think they realized their business plan, relying on a workforce, an army force that needs drugs to comply. I think they realized, let's streamline shit for the 25th century.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. And Captain Shaw seems to be coming. He's sort of at this point, he's all in with these guys by the end of it, because he realizes like, oh shit, we are in serious trouble.
The way he says, I'm going to leave you alone. I'm going to leave you. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm going to leave you alone for a few minutes. You can get your bullshit story straight.
It's funny. So I will say, this is not a complaint or a negative, but I wish we had gotten been able to get a double episode just to give us more time with Ro, where I would have loved her and Riker to get more to do, and maybe even get her and Seven.
If there's one complaint I have, it's that the two of them don't share the frame together.
Yeah, which is just, the episode. They jam a lot into this episode, so I get it, I've enjoyed Picard season 3 from the get-go. I think it gets better with each episode from 1 through 6 at least. But I've kind of said, how I feel like some of the fan service at times has gone a little too far for my taste, especially in the beginning. But I feel like this episode, really, they've really got the balance going of it's not, this isn't really even fan service at this point. It's just smart storytelling. So thumbs up.
Really well said, Scott. And I tweeted this before, but this isn't just a great episode of Trek. This is a great episode of television. And I don't think fans are fully mindful yet or appreciative of the level of television we're seeing. It's not just great Star Trek, it's great sci-fi TV. This is some great character-driven stuff compared to some of the shows that are on air that aren't really resonating the way they should. Like Scott said, the economy is here, the characters are driving the storylines, the plot is fueling a lot of momentum, but it's the characters that are riding that wave, and you're caring so much about them that you get caught up in how riveting it all is. And I think when we look back on this, I think every 5 or 10 years, we're going to do oral histories on how awesome this season was,
Yeah. It's good. All right. So maybe it's time to head to the Replimat.
Let's head to the Replimat. Speaking of Ferengis,
I'm going to the Replimat to get something to eat.
Right. What do you got?
Well, Scott, I recently saw this on the big screen in stunning 4K. Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, man. Wow. Really? It was playing in 4K. I didn't realize.
Yeah, it turned 30 last year, and there was a screening I could not make for some reason. Last weekend, the local Alamo Draft House where I live has had a brunch screening of it, a 12:15 screening. I had a great seat. The picture looked perfectly filmic, even though it was a 4K DCP presentation. Look, that movie is a hot mess, but it is such a propellant, confident, romantic, horny, hot mess.
Yeah. I love it.
I do too. The flourishes in that movie, from the performers. Coppola is just, he and his editor and his DP, they're just all in concert together to they're delivering the cinema equivalent of turning it up to 11, which you feel when you watch Moulin Rouge, you feel when you watch any Baz Luhrmann movie post a Strictly Ballroom, frankly, or yeah. when you watch Fury Road, like it's that type of cinema experience. And, you know, Gary Oldman's line reading of "your friend, D," has been living in my head for 30 years. In a small condo in my brain rattles around, you know?
So good. The opening scene, you know, the pre-credits origin story, basically, it is amazing. Have you ever seen there's another cut of that opening scene?
What?
I think it's on YouTube. I don't know. I'm not clear on what the backstory is. If it was just a work print cut or if, I don't know, but look for it. It's bad or it just doesn't play. It might also be it doesn't have the music and stuff. I'm trying to remember, but like, look for it after we're done here.
I'm searching for it now. I apologize for my key press voice.
But yeah, but the intro of the finished film is amazing, right? Like Coppola working with his son Roman to do all that's all practical effects. The whole movie, I think, pretty much is all this like old school in camera effects and stuff.
Yeah,
so good. Oh my god,
they didn't use anything they didn't have in the time period the movie is set.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So
love it.
My thing is the first two Mission Impossible movies, actually. I decided to go back and rewatch them because my viewing record of the Mission Impossible movies is a little spotty. Like, I'm not sure I've actually seen every single one straight through. So I decided to just go back. Yeah. I think I mostly have, but I feel like there's like Mission Impossible 2, for example. I don't think I had ever seen that full movie until I just rewatched 1 and 2 recently. I haven't gotten to the rest of them yet. It was Mission Impossible 1. I raced right through it, and then Mission Impossible 2 took me like all week. I was like watching it in like 12-minute increments and I'd fall asleep. It's bad. Oh, Mission Impossible 2. So I'm not recommending it. I'm merely mentioning it. But I am recommending Mission Impossible 1. The second one, it's weird. It's like it's John Woo. It's Tom Cruise, obviously highly invested in in making this into a franchise. And Robert Towne, I think, is the credited screenwriter.
Yeah.
Right, it's from a story by Ron Moore and Brandon Braga. Coming, I think they must have been riding high after First Contact, and it just the movie doesn't work. But the first one is pretty good. I like the first one a lot. So those are my Replimat picks.
And we're also going to have the Light the Fuse podcast host on our podcast. We're going to do a crossover episode with them soon.
So, yeah, we got to do that. It's going to be like what's a good crossover episode? Like when Gilligan's Island met the monkeys or something? I don't know if that even happened.
Maybe the monkeys.
Obviously us. All right, should we move on to the red shirt?
Let's do the red shirts or red shirts, I should say.
Attention all crew. Please don your dress uniforms and prepare the photon torpedo coffins. It's time for the red shirt of the week.
This harkens back to episode 304.
Yeah.
Of Picard.
Last week, yeah.
Shaw's buddies on the Constance, who did not get selected for that life pod. They got a big photon torpedo. They got a starship-sized photon torpedo funeral at that Battle of Wolf 359. So whatever Shaw likes to drink, he's a whiskey man himself, doesn't really like the wine too much. We'll pour one out for them.
Do you think Shaw and Sisko did like were in some kind of survivor's
I hope those bitches met at some point and conferred, hey, do you believe this guy? Can we talk about this? Like, there's so many other officers out there, too, that have been hurt by Picard's exploit. I'm surprised we never got in canon until now, you know, or we never saw Next Gen, like, you know, someone going after Picard, like their white whale, the way the villain in Hope and Fear and Voyager does after Seven, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally. It's almost like that was the story, but we should have gotten the Picard version of that story. Also, I think they say, is the running casualty number 11,000 from Wolf 359? But that seems really low.
It sounds like a lot though, too, at the same time, you know?
Sounds like a lot, but when you consider like each starship holds 1,000 people in that era.
Yeah, 400 to 1,000 people, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm surprised there weren't more, but that's just the cat. Those are dead. That doesn't include wounded and people who were, you know, like people like Shaw who survived, but obviously, you know, were, you know, damaged for life by the incident as well. So, but yeah, the Constance.
RIP guys. Yeah. But thank you for your service during that futile battle.
Yeah. Yeah. But you'll be glad to know that Locutus of Borg is still the hero of Earth. So,
right.
All right. On that very dour note, we will go to our housekeeping. Let's, as always, please write in, contact us by whatever means you like, and talk to us about Star Trek Picard or whatever else you want to talk about. You can hit us on transporterroom3@gmail.com. Talk to us on Facebook. You can hit us on Twitter @ScottCalora @PhilPerrello. Of course, also please like and subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, your podcast service of choice. And then also look for us over on Patreon, where we've got exclusive episodes and other perks if you subscribe over there. We're going to have an exclusive interview probably next week from one of the writers on the show, it looks like. Yes. So that'll be cool. And that'll pretty much do it, Phil. I guess, you know, we'll talk next week again about more Star Trek. Picard.
Yeah, can't wait. Can't wait for 306. And I hope everyone else enjoys it as much as we did. So thank you for listening. And until next time, we'll see you on Gravid Island.